League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Two starts right now. Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5 on an FEF Friday in the big city. Trey in for Nick, Barry and myself as we take you into the weekend. Blitz will come on at 4 o'clock from Vegas, getting you ready for the big fight this weekend. As Barry mentioned, we're going to have a special guest at 2:30 talking about the fight, breaking it down. Our friend Trey, who's always, not you, Trey.
Trey Blackwell.
Trey Blackwell's always good about breaking fights down for us, so he's going to be joining us. But before that, Rockets rolled past the Warriors last night. Sixth time in Rockets franchise history, they've made at least 25 threes in a game. Every other team in the league has two such games combined. I mean, they also made 18 more threes than Golden State, tied for the third largest difference in a game in NBA history. And let's not forget, the first time that they surpassed and became the and tied the record for most threes in a game, they did it against Golden State here, which started the whole rivalry between the Warriors and the Rockets. When Draymond Green was tackling people, when Mark Jackson was the coach, and then the famous euphemism with Chandler Parsons and Andrew Bogut and the C word and all that. But big win for the Rockets last night, even more importantly than everything between Westbrook and Harden and what they were able to do. Jeff Green comes in on a 10-day contract, 17 points, was drilling threes, 6'9", helping out. If this is what they're going to get out of this guy, and Damari Carroll didn't even play last night. But if you get that out of Jeff Green, that's a fantastic move for this team.
Mark Carroll played last night.
I mean, he didn't get anything from him.
Oh, I mean, he played 13 minutes.
He didn't get anything from him.
Correct.
You got 17 points from Green.
You got 4 assists, 3 rebounds.
You didn't get anything from him.
That's not bad in mop-up duty. And, you know, I mean, look, I thought Carroll actually, the link that he showed defensively is going to help the team.
Oh, it will. That's what I'm saying. I'm not denying he's not going to help eventually, but a guy
compared
on a
to
10
what Green
day that
did,
gives you 17 points.
But that's a dude playing for a contract for the rest of the year. You wonder, is that going to be the case once he gets one?
He was a plus 19.
Yeah.
He was 4 of 5 from 3. I mean, he filled up the box score.
I tell you, to me, more impressive right now is Covington. That guy, he's been everything advertised and more to me.
Knocked he was down a plus 31.
Huge threes.
When your Rockets box score consists of all five starters being a plus in the plus-minus, from plus 5 was the lowest for House to plus 32 for Harden, and then off the bench you get a plus 27 from McLemore, a plus 12 from Rivers, and a plus 19 from Jeff Green. Now you're talking about a team that went from no bench to a fantastic bench and the productivity at a small ball right now. Granted, it's a bad team.
Yeah, there was a really bad team.
But notice, Jeff Green was one of the first guys off the bench last night, so you know D'Antoni trusts him. Threw him out there right away, and he fit right in.
Yeah, I was surprised to see Carroll actually in the game because they said he had signed prior to the game, but he was out there anyways. I thought Rivers gave him some decent minutes off the bench as well. But yeah, getting 17 from Green, if you can get that kind of production from him consistently, it's really going to boost your bench scoring, especially when you get Eric Gordon back. If you got Green and Gordon coming off the bench, if you're starting five, now I don't know if House is going to be moved to the bench and Gordon slides into that starting five, but it wouldn't exactly hurt my feelings if it was Tucker, Covington, House, Westbrook, and Harden to start a game, and then you bring in Green and Gordon off the bench to give you some offense and defense.
Here's why I would bring Gordon off the bench, and I've told you this before. I think certain guys, in order to feel like they're a part of the game, need to get their offense. And I think Eric Gordon's one of those guys. And then the other thing I think is that sometimes when you have such ball-dominant players in the starting lineup that are going to take a majority of the shots, like Harden and Westbrook, you need to save some of that for your second unit. So when those guys are sitting, you've got potent offense coming off the bench. That's why you now have several guys to choose from that can come off the bench and help this team. Otherwise, that's part of the reason why they kind of staggered Harden and Westbrook, so it was one on the floor, the other on the bench, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So now they don't have to do that.
Yeah, you've got legitimate scores, and I kind of like the idea of if your first man out would probably be you're going to rest Westbrook first. That's usually been the case, right? Mm-hmm. So you bring in Gordon for that, but I don't know if it might make sense for if you do it that way, and then when Harden goes out, you bring in Green because you're going to get a little better defensively as well.
I think the most important takeaways, though, are they shot 51% from three, mm-hmm. which means, and obviously Jeff Green, 4 or 5. I don't know if he's going to do that every night.
No, he's about a 33% shooter.
But
so
we'll take it.
Sure.
But when you look at just the overall, the big thing is you now have options. Just to your point, you have versatility you didn't have because D'Antoni didn't like going to that second unit. And when he did, they normally, my big pet peeve was how many big leads they give up and double-digit leads. Most of the time, that was because the bench was on the floor to get it going and start really giving it all back. Now you've got a second unit that can be very productive. And to your point, if you want to go defense, well, you can go Carroll and Green. If you want to go offense, then you can, you know, bring in an Eric Gordon and a Rivers or something like that. But you have guys you can go to you didn't have in the past. So just the fact that this team is deeper, whether they continue to play small ball or not, it looks like they're going to, and it looks like right now it's working for them. Playoffs is a different story, but
they're definitely deeper. I don't know if they're poised to compete with the LA teams. I just don't.
I agree, or Milwaukee.
I think they're definitely deeper and better. Kind of like we talked about last year when the season started. It was like, what is this team? Who is this? And then by the end of the year, you're like, oh, okay. And it's been like that the last couple of years. And so are the Rockets better now than when they started the season? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. They're deeper. They're better. They've got more maturity. They've got guys that know their role and are probably going to be really good at being role players. A guy like Covington's not going to come in and cause a lot of issues. He's not going to demand the ball, but when he gets it, he's been making it count. And that's huge for this team, too. I tweeted it last night, and I really think it's starting to show more and more because of the fact that Westbrook has stopped shooting threes. The offense is getting more flow when James is not on the court. But when the ball runs through James, this offense is ugly.
Yep.
And if they can somehow figure out how to get him involved but continue to move the ball, then I think you're talking about a team that competes with the upper echelon of the NBA. But as long as James is still so dominant at many points during the game, that could be an issue because, especially if he's not making shots, and he went 3 of 12 from 3-point range last night. And yeah, he got you 29, and that was tops. But again, 6 of 16 shooting. He needed 14 free throws. I just don't like that style of offense. And I realize
it's not a conducive style of offense. And here's the thing that I kept saying, and I said this when they traded for Westbrook. I said they're going to be a relevant team next year when otherwise they wouldn't have been, but the playoffs remain to be seen. Mm-hmm. Well, now after these moves, they're going to be a really, really good regular season team. But how they play in the playoffs is going to be a different animal. And we know that teams, when they scheme for the Rockets, are going to do what you're just saying. They're going to prepare for, we know James is going to have the ball. Therefore, we're going to suffocate him. We're going to trap him at midcourt. We're going to get it into somebody else's hands. Or we're going to let him dribble most of the shot clock out, and then when he's not expecting it or he doesn't see it, we're going to collapse late. They're going to be in panic mode. They're not going to be able to play they want to play.
And that was a lot last night. But you see that at times with James where he doesn't use his teammates unless it's to bail him out at the last second during the shot clock. And I'm fine if he wants to play iso ball. I get it that's part of the game. That's part of his game. That's part of the NBA and all that. Fine, play iso ball. But just do it earlier in the shot clock. And then if nothing is there, you can distribute the ball and maybe make a move to the bucket sooner or whatever. But the problem is it's just him dribbling between his legs for 10 seconds, looking around. It's just, I don't know, eight seconds to get up the court, 10 seconds to him dribbling it. Just becomes ugly offense. Well, when they've got shooters on this team, use them.
If you're like playing a team in the playoffs, it was beautiful. That's why I say the playoffs could be a different animal, because if you're playing a team in the playoffs with an experienced coaching staff, mm-hmm. they're going to go, we want you to dribble all that shot clock out because we don't have to exert any energy on defense. And then at the appropriate time, and we'll mix it up, we'll bring the trap from the left or the right, or one of the guards will come the first time, one of the bigs will come the second time. But regardless, it's so easy to defend as opposed to what you're talking about. A team that's unpredictable where they can attack at any time with Westbrook, where guys are in constant movement with and without the ball. Then you become a tough team to defend. But this team, like you said, that's why I don't have all the confidence in the world that Milwaukee, they may get there. But I just think, and that's probably because the East isn't that loaded, but I really want to see when Giannis faces the same kind of thing. Giannis doesn't dribble it as much, but he has the ball a lot to where if you collapse on him, can they run an offense that they haven't run all year?
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting thing. I mean, the small ball thing is going to be, we're going to see what it is by the end of the year for sure. Mm-hmm. I just, The other thing is when we were talking, not to bounce around too much, but we were talking about what do you do with the rotation, right? Have you got your starting five? One thing we never mentioned is who are you plugging in for P.J. Tucker? Because you're running Covington out there. Obviously, he's going to be a starter. I mean, you got Gerald Green. He's listed as a power forward because he's 6'8". But what he's listed as, a power forward.
Jeff Green.
You've got Jeff Green listed as a power forward.
That's who it's
going to be. You went out and got Carroll, who's he's 6'6". But, man, his arms, I bet his wingspan is 7'5". He's got really long arms. He looked like he could be a shot blocker. So I don't know what that rotation is with Tucker. You think it's Green for Tucker?
I read Green's lips last night when he first checked into the game too, and he's like looking for his defensive matchups, and they're all like, "You got Looney." So okay. I think they're going to expect, because of just the length and the size at 6'9", he'll take the biggest guy on the floor.
Gotcha.
Based on the fact that there's not a lot of big, bulky post players in the West. You got 7-footers, but they're not exactly going to lay their ass on you and you're going to be blown backwards. This is one where I think that, you know, they're going to look to Green to be that guy, because PJ, that's the other thing, you touch on it, but he needs more rest.
He does. He really does. And that's why I brought it up. As far as Russ getting ejected, that was all his fault. He threw that elbow.
Most of them this year have been.
Yeah, and he threw the elbow. Lee kind of didn't take the bait and walked off, which is interesting because you could see he elbowed Lee in the chest, and Lee said something to him, and you saw Russ mouth, "What are you going to do about it?" And Lee walked away, but in his defense, several other teammates walked over to Russ and got in his face.
Looney was one of them.
Yeah, Looney was one of them, and then I think Carroll came over there to break it up.
Walk to their bench and stand there.
Exactly, and start talking, because that's exactly what he did. He deserved to be ejected from the game, and it's funny because his quote was, where the hell did it go? I just lost it. But they were talking about how he thinks he's the victim. He basically said, "Oh, I'm always the one that gets painted to be the bad guy." No, you elbowed a dude in the chest and then walked to the opposing team's bench and stood in front of him so you could talk best. You're the bad guy, Russ. You were the bad guy last night.
But
I'm sorry.
The bigger issue, Barry, is if you're going to do these kind of things when you know you're emotional, you can't get the one in the first half where you didn't get the and one, so you clapped your hands at a referee, and it was an obvious call by the officials. It's a technical when you show them up. It's in the guidelines the officials give you for what constitutes a technical, and he's gotten too many of those little ticky-tack techs.
Yeah.
And this goes back to Kevin Durant a few years ago and some of the other guys that when you get down to it, if you can't control your emotions in the regular season and you're teetering on being suspended, that can be an even bigger issue when you come to the playoffs.
It's like it reminds me of Dwight Howard in the postseason. You knew you could get him out of his game and get a technical and make him do something stupid. All you had to do was go bully him a little bit. Russ has got to keep it in check, man. And I realize he's got a fiery temper and he's always been that way. He needs
channel
to be in the game.
You have to channel it.
That's right.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to channel our innermost Russ. We're going to channel it and keep going forward. We've got another clip coming up from our Comedian of the Week. We've got lots more fun game surprises and a guest, as Trey's going to join us at 2:30 to talk a little bit about the big fight this weekend. Kind of interesting there, too. They're not going to allow them to go face-to-face today based on the pushing the other day at the press conference. So we could talk about all of that with Tyson Fury. And Wilder. Much more to come. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Name the comic. Stage name. Comic of the Week.
Good stuff.
Good stuff right there.
Yeah.
Got another clip coming up at 3:15. Stay tuned for that. Barry gave you the backstory in hour number one.
BlameTheComic.com. Check him out on Facebook. His videos, he'll dress up like a mom and just goes off on everything, and it's hysterical. Highly recommend checking out Blame the Comic's Facebook videos. There's a reason he went viral. They're that funny.
Good to know. Good stuff for you there on an FEF Friday. F for funny. You can check that out. F for fury or fight. We also have a giveaway to get to. We might as well do that now and just let you know that ESPN 97.5, as you know, is in Vegas covering the fight with AJ and Fred and Nick and Jerry Bowe and all those people. And there's a chance for you to cash in a little bit and get yourself something cool. Undefeated heavyweights battling for the world title. It's Deontay Bronze Bomber Wilder and Tyson the Gypsy King Fury Part 2. ESPN 97.5 wants to give one lucky winner an autographed glove signed by each fighter. You can go to our ESPN 97.5 Twitter page. Find, like, and retweet the boxing glove post for your chance to win it. And don't miss Wilder versus Fury live Saturday night, February 22nd. That's this Saturday, only on pay-per-view. Should be a good fight.
Yeah, it should. I'm looking forward to it. Walt said, most local comedians are so-so, but Blame is legit funny AF. Glad he's
and
coming
Walt
back.
And Walt follows a lot of comedy.
Yeah, he does. So he would know.
Good to know there. I guess now, fellas, the saga in baseball has become death threats. Because Mike Fiers has come out and said he's faced death threats. Then Tony Clark, the head of the Players Association.
I'm not okay with. I know snitching is whole stuff, but there's no reason to threaten that man's life.
There's not. And or the family, and or because Josh Reddick has come out.
The family out of it for sure.
Well, but this is what social media has created. We have these, we call them the keyboard warriors and the, you know, the cowards that hide behind.
The text line is full of them.
All of that, right? But it's one thing to just take pot shots. But then when you take it to that level, you don't realize that's a crime. And if they can trace it and find it, you're in trouble. And I think that people just feel like because I did it on social media, I have immunity. And you don't. But Tony Clark, the head of the Players Association, was in Astros camp. They met for over an hour today with the team. His consensus as the takeaway in talking to the Astros players, that there have been too many death threats, threats on their family, issues that they're concerned with. As I mentioned, Mike Fiers says he's received them as well. The players are trying to address them. They want to know the right way to handle all of this. It's just, it won't go away. It's not going away. But the fact that it's come to this level just shows you that Rob Manfred's got to get control of this whole situation.
Well, Rob Manfred and Tony Clark and everybody else can't control idiots in the public. You just, it's
true.
You know, you just can't. There's nothing you can do about that. Just make sure your players are safe. And that's literally all you can do. And it's going to be up to authorities to pursue any of these death threats or the other things that are happening. It's a shame that it does happen. At the end of the day, it's still just a sport. Like we talk about that, and you know, at the end of the day, this is not a life or death situation.
I keep saying that.
So why threaten someone's life with death? Like this doesn't. That's just, it's asinine and absurd to me. And if you're that worked up about it, man, that speaks volumes about your personal issues that you and demons you face.
Sorry your life sucks, but don't take it out on others. That basically what it comes down to, because I've been saying all along, we always say it's just sports, so it's a discussion. And we can discuss sports because they're an escape. But when they become a reality instead of an escape, and you guys are worried about putting threats on people's lives because of which team wins and which team loses and how they go about it, it's just,
if you
want to
hate
much.
The Astros, hate them. If you want to hate the players, hate them. That's fine. But to threaten people's lives and their family, their wife, Mike Fiers' wife had nothing to do with that, or family members or whoever. I don't know if he's married, but these guys' wives, girlfriends, kids, none of them had anything to do with any of this.
I
leave them
that,
alone.
But I do remember his last name because it's on his forum.
See, that's a whole. If you want to attack something, attack the fact that he has his name tattooed on his forum.
Yeah, larger than life. Right. Yeah.
I would agree with that. Go after him for that.
And here's the other thing. Richard Justice was on with Lance this morning. MLB Network, former Houston Chronicle writer, I believe. Mm-hmm.
I am the media, brother.
Yeah, he sure thinks so. But
no, that's what he said. That was a famous from the 1560 days. Well, someone called it. He had a show on 1560. And someone called his show and was like, the media doesn't know bleep. And he goes, I am the media, brother. So.
Well, he was crotchety today. Yeah. And
big surprise.
He was defending the Yankees. And he was saying that people he's talked to in Major League Baseball says the Red Sox ruling's coming down and that there's already another team once the Red Sox investigation is done with that Rob Manfred will be investigating. But he was quick to point out that it wasn't the Yankees. And I don't understand the concept of you can only do this one team at a time.
Right.
You've got a large enough staff. You've got people that have already been working on all these different investigations. If you know it's out there, and again, I encourage you people to go to Astros County and see the timeline of all the different people and all the different articles that were written about the different teams that may or may not have been involved in all different aspects of this, to realize Major League Baseball needs to attack this start to finish, team and multiple teams at a time, until they can get a grasp on it and put it behind them by policing it. One team at a time is not doing anybody any good.
No, it just drags it out, really.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have multiple investigations going. I see your point on that. But yeah, it's just going to keep dragging it out and dragging it out. And when and where do you stop once you start investigating this? Are you just going after cheaters that cheat using video? Or are you going to have to start going after cheaters across the board?
Well, and that's what I think the case is too, Barry. I think the fact is when they look at it, they go, well, what means did you use to cheat? Because if you use the old school means, you're okay. But if you use too much technology, then you're going to be punished to the utmost letter of the law. And I don't think that's right either, because there is no, if it's wrong, it's wrong.
Right. I agree with you.
And otherwise, and the thing that I really just boggles my mind, not because I'm a fan of a certain team, but because I don't understand the protection of the Yankees. Why isn't there more investigative work being done if Beltran played for 3 years previously to the 2017 season with the Yankees? And by the way, before that, he played for the Rangers, and the Rangers were one of the teams on that timeline in which they were saying have been cheating for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And when the article comes out, just like
maybe that's
the
why
commissioner's
Bannister-
office has reacted based on articles in some cases, right? When a story comes out. One of the stories came out that when Beltran got to the Astros, he said, God, you guys are really behind the times. Well, if he was referring to the fact that the last team he was with to the Astros is behind the times, then investigate it.
Well, I mean, we know that the Yankees did this. Here's the thing. Here's the point where I think the line in the sand has to be drawn. We know, and this is just ad nauseum, but we know the Yankees cheated by moving their yes cameras to be positioned and pointed at the opposing team's dugout. They absolutely did that. There is plenty of documentation regarding that. The Red Sox had video proof of it. We know that the Red Sox use an Apple Watch. The difference is...
Both teams did.
I know, but the difference is there was a mandate that came out from Rob Manfred in baseball that said, going forward, at any point, if you use technology to steal signs, it's big trouble for you. And that's when you start the investigation. You don't go back to 2017 or whenever it was before the memo came out, which is the
but
Yankees caused
innuendo.
The memo to come out.
My point is there's enough innuendo between the Girardi video we referenced the other day and him saying there was a system in place to Judge in the dugout.
But that was prior to the memo.
No, last year in the playoffs, Judge with the iPad, and then he hid it from the camera, and that was a big deal. There's enough innuendo to say we need to at least do our due diligence because there's stuff popping up.
Yeah, well, with Beltran being there, I would agree with that. But I think, you know, although I'm sitting here saying you can't go out to do anything prior to the memo coming out, but I wonder if that had anything to do with the Astros investigation, because I know it was part of the big reason why Luno got let go was the memo. Mm-hmm. That was the sticking point. But you determined they used electronic means to cheat, but did you punish him before or prior to the memo as well? That has to be taken into account.
Plus, if you're, say, said team, you're the Kansas City Royals, and you hear all of a sudden it's coming out that they're getting caught, you're scrapping your cameras, you're ripping things up, you're making sure they can't go back and see something that's there now.
Yeah, for sure. You would think.
And I don't think any other team's dumb enough to bang on a can.
Don't sell these people all short. Right.
Well, let's not sell him short. That means Trey Blackwell is going to come in next. Talk about the big fight coming up tomorrow night in Las Vegas. He's our boxing expert. He'll be here to kick it around, talk about what's coming up in the ring. Don't go anywhere. Second. Bye.
Friends, let's talk about Daniel. A year ago, he resolved to stop putting off what he wanted to do, get into information technology. Daniel enrolled in My Computer Career and is now already a few months into his IT career. Make 2020 your year. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. You could start your new life as an IT pro in as little as 4 months. Classes meet on campus or live online just 2 times a week. It ain't rocket science. It's My Computer Career. mycomputercareer.edu.
Our new PXG Gen 3 irons are the best golf irons we've ever made by a long shot. Gen 3 irons deliver game-changing distance, outstanding accuracy, with a feel so soft, it's like spreading warm butter on a hot biscuit. Oh my! Gen 3 irons are sold only at PXG stores, PXG fitting studios, PXG.com, and at select custom fitters like Club Champion. To find out where to get your set, visit PXG.com or call 844-PLAY-PXG today.
With Nick Sciarra.
Back on the usual suspects. Nick's out. Trey is in. It's just everything haywire. That Trey is in. Now this Trey is in. It's just, see what you started?
No, don't blame that. Don't blame redheaded Trey for Black Trey's mic not being on. Can we just call you Black Trey? Is that all right,
you
Trey?
Just went you redheaded want. On him?
Yeah, redheaded Trey.
Next, you're going to tell me he's a stepchild?
Trey, you're redheaded, right?
Correct.
Okay. What was inaccurate about that? And Trey Blackwell, his name is Blackwell, and he's black.
I'm not just black, Trey.
Well, see? So there you go.
I do black very well.
Before it even got on the rails today, it was off the rails, and we've continued to take it off the rails.
It's been pretty bad.
So you're going to have to bring it back in. Trey Blackwell is with us. He is the guy that always breaks down the big fights as they pop up from time to time, and he is with us to talk about Wilder Fury 2 this weekend.
Welcome back.
huge fight, man. Huge for the heavyweight division. I am happy to be here with the suspects. Thank you guys for having me.
Is this the biggest fight in recent memory?
In a long time. Okay. If you remember, the first time I came on your guys' show was for Wilder Fury 1. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And nailed that one to a T, if I don't say so myself.
Yeah, you did.
But I feel like this one is just on a different level. It's a bigger scope. The world is watching. It's a great return to prominence for the heavyweight division.
Now, I think the most recent events that took place was the face-off and the pushing. I just want to get your opinion on that. And I'm not buying it. That did not look like real pushing and shoving to me.
The Nevada Boxing Commission said they will not go face-to-face today because of it.
Yeah, people are too sensitive these days. That's just what it boils down to. They're fighters. They're going to fight. If you put two pit bulls, not that I condone that type of thing. I'm no Michael Vick supporter. Yeah. But if you put two pit bulls in front of each other, you get them close enough, something bad's going to happen. They're about to fight. Yes, they have to be professionals, but I've seen a whole lot worse at face-offs before. That was very tame.
Do you think not allowing them to do the face-off was more of a move to, hey, if you guys ban this, that'll really up the pay-per-views because then it legitimizes the pushing and shoving?
Of course. It's a ploy to sell tickets.
Gotcha.
So you look at it, and you look at Wilder's the guy that knows that he's not exactly the biggest technician. You know he's not the box, but he carries a right hand that in one, if he lands one, it's all he needs.
A megaton.
And he's shown that. Yes. He can lower the boom at any time. And you've got a guy in Fury that's come in, and he's dropped weight. He looks like he's not – last time, let's be honest, there's been fights where he didn't look like he's really in shape.
Correct.
This time, he looks like he's in better shape.
Best shape of his life.
He's more of a technician. Does it matter if there's still the possibility of walking into the one boom
shot? That's the beauty of the sport is that we just don't know. All we can do is predict and up our knowledge base. That's why I'm here, to help you guys make the best predictions possible. The last time I checked the line was this morning. Wilder was a slight favorite. He was at minus 125, and Tyson Fury was plus 105. So I think that Vegas has given Wilder the edge, and I believe that anytime a fighter is in the rematch, if he gets any measure of success where he lands his punches or he puts the other fighter down, then he knows he can do it. The fact of the matter is there is not a single thing that Deontay Wilder can do better than Tyson Fury other than punch. That's it.
But that's all it takes, though, right?
I
heard AJ talking about this one time, and I don't know if Wilder says this a lot or if AJ said it, so I want to give credit where it's due, and I think you'll know if Wilder says it a lot. But he said, either AJ said it or Wilder said, they have to be accurate all the time.
All the time.
I only have to be accurate once.
Yeah. It's so true. It's so true. And in the first fight, Tyson Fury boxed circles around Deontay Wilder for 11 rounds until he got touched, and he went down. He ate it well, and I believe that he'll be able to eat those punches well just because of the sheer size of Tyson Fury. The last time he was fighting, he fought Deontay Wilder. He came down 100 pounds.
Crazy.
So he's got a new camp. He's got a new nutritionist that lives with him. He's got a new coach. He's doing everything the right way this time. I believe he said in the face-off, he said, it's the first time I ate me fruits and vegetables. So
quit drinking Diet Coke.
Exactly.
Masturbate seven times a day to get his testosterone up.
That's it.
He said that as well.
That's the truth.
Wow, so he cut back?
Yeah,
he cut back. He's running those numbers. But the other thing, like you said, with the whole press conference the other day, but they also come out and they give their strategies, and then you wonder, is that just something so that the other camp believes it or not? Because Fury came out and said, I'm going to come out and go at him, and I'm going to go at him hard, and I'm going to bring it body to body quickly. Is that the smartest move for him?
Definitely not. No, you don't want to stand in front of Deontay Wilder in any spaces you can trade. And Tyson Fury has an IQ high enough to know that he's going to win this fight on his feet. He did it the first time, and I believe he won the first fight. And I believe Deontay Wilder knows that he got beat the first fight. He got very, very lucky in landing that punch, and he put him down. But the man bounced right off the canvas and said, "What now?" and boxed the crap out of him.
So he threw that out there just to say, hope they bite on it. But we're going to see a different fight Saturday night.
I believe Tyson Fury is going to fight the exact same fight, but the mental warfare only does you enough good up until the first bell. So anything he can do to throw Wilder off or let him know that a game plan might change or get Wilder to blow his load early because he thinks a man's going to be standing in front of him, whatever he can do, he's going to do that. But when that bell sounds, he's going to be on his feet. He's going to be behind a jab. He's going to have savvy defense, and he's going to have a high, high boxing IQ. We just hope that Wilder can pull the trigger because I'm rooting for the United States on this
one. Yeah?
Yeah.
Now, I read somewhere where Wilder, they said not much has changed. I mean, when you talked about Fury and all the things that he's changed. Wilder hasn't changed a lot. He did go out and add a new trainer, Sugar Hill Stewart, who they said is a knockout architect, knockout. Sure. So you basically, does that make sense that if you're really good at one thing, which is in Wilder's case, you're a knockout artist, you add a trainer that enhances that skill set, or should he have maybe added something different, like a defensive specialist that helps him work on his defense? Because you know he's going to get outboxed.
Correct.
Did you like the move of adding Stewart?
No, you play to your strengths. It's the former that you said, Barry. To quote the late, great Emmanuel Stewart, is that we teach knockouts here in Kronk. Mm-hmm. And knockouts are something that have to be set up. It's something that you have to build. I believe that Deontay did the right thing in hiring Stewart for his new camp. I believe that when you understand that you can touch somebody, you just look for more opportunities to pull the trigger. And that's all the hope that Wilder has. He has great hope in both hands. He can put anybody on in the world down with both hands, but he's going to have to find those opportunities in this fight. Anybody that can help you do that, that's a great move.
I saw a comparison of Wilder in ways to Tyson.
Yeah.
Where he's not a boxer. He's a knockout artist. He's a puncher.
Exactly.
And is he kind of our modern-day version of that? Just not as dominant?
I would not say that. Okay. Whatsoever. Punching power, pound for pound, yes, I would say that. He is not half the technician that Iron Mike was. He can't hold a candle to him defensively. He gets touched too much. Mike Tyson in his prime, you couldn't touch him. And if he made you miss, he made you pay. And he was making you pay with 2, 3, 4 body shots, uppercuts coming around the corner, overhand rights and left. It was an onslaught and a storm that many reputable heavyweights just could not deal with in the late 80s, early 90s.
That was the beautiful thing about Tyson is everyone thought he was a headhunter, but he was smart. He would use the body to get you to drop your hands to knock you out.
It was
a better
time to be a boxing fan. We were just talking about how much this pay-per-view is. Jeez, man.
But 80 bucks?
Yeah, I didn't mind paying 30 bucks back then, man, or my dad paying 30 bucks. Exactly, because we knew we were only going to get 3 rounds of action tops.
Right? So how does this go? How do you see the fight shaping up this weekend?
Honestly, I believe that Wilder has gotten better as far as he's seen the man in front of him. He knows where he needs to close the distance. And the thing about Tyson Fury is that his jab and his footwork and his feints, which are fake punches that get you to put your hands up and to stall you so that he can do his work, those get you to be hesitant. They hesitate in pulling the trigger. I think Wilder is going to get close to him enough to be able to do that. The anomaly is Tyson Fury's in the best shape of his life. He's in the best shape of his life. He's going to be able to go the distance, no problem, and he's going to be that much faster, that much more in shape. My gut is telling me that Wilder will find him, but I believe it's going to be more of the same along the lines of the first fight. Tyson Fury's going to box him, and then...
So it goes to the judges?
It comes down to... Or either that, or he does get him. He catches him with that one big blow.
I see a lot of people predicting a Wilder knockout this time around.
Yeah, the likelihood of that happening, I believe, is low, but we also have to think about cuts. Tyson Fury's last fight, he fought Otto Wallin from Sweden, and his eye got a horrific gash over the top. I don't think that Deontay Wilder is enough of a volume puncher to be able to capitalize on the cut, but this thing could stop early because there's a lot of scar tissue over those eyes of Tyson Fury.
Great point.
So it can go anyway. I'm excited. My gut, when I woke up this morning, said Deontay Wilder.
There you go. You heard it from the man himself.
Tell everybody where to find you, because if they want to get into boxing too, you can help them out.
That's right. You can find me here. I work and live and commentate and do all things boxing here out of Houston, Texas at 7-Eleven Fit downtown. And I just started at Empower Fitness Laboratory. That's on Washington and Sawyer. Group Fitness, RBX, running, boxing, and ropes. Come check us out.
There you go. Trey, appreciate the knowledge and have a great weekend. We'll enjoy watching the fight. Catch back up with you. We'll be back with a whole lot more. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Wrapping up hour number 2, 3-hour show. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Got a little fight preview. Of course, we've got guys in Vegas that are going to be giving you that and more all the way through 7 o'clock with Fred and AJ and Nick and Jerry Bow and everybody that's Las Vegas. Is Booker T there again?
He is there.
Okay.
Brad Gilmore's there. Didn't you produce for them yesterday after our show?
I did.
Look at you, man. You know, I remember when all you did was answer calls.
I remember that,
You are the real American story, Trey. You've moved up in the world, and I'm very... Why are you throwing your glasses? I'm trying to pay the young man a compliment.
Because lately, every time you pump him up,
uh-huh,
he steps in and takes another step he doesn't need to take.
please don't take another step. And we'll be good. I'm just trying to give you a compliment. He says in our ear, I'm keeping my mic off.
Someone who will remain nameless.
You know I love you, buddy. You know.
I walked down the hall a half hour ago. And someone who will remain nameless went, did Trey just like take over your role on The Usual Suspects? I go, it's temporary. It's fine. It's not a big deal. So we got the good boxing coverage both here and there. And so you can stay tuned for the Blitz. We'll should have more on everything going on with that big fight. But I think you touched on it, and it is true. I mean, this is the biggest, especially from the heavyweight division, this is the biggest, probably sexiest matchup we've had in the fight game in quite some time when it comes to a huge boxing matchup. Two undefeated guys, both in the prime of their career.
Yeah.
You know, they've changed some of the things that they've been faulted for in the past. I mean, you look at Fury in the past, and he's just blown up, and he looks sloppy, and, you know, he looked like the new new trend in heavyweight boxing looked like it could be, you know, some big, you know, blubber puncher, like a butter beaner. But now he's toned up. He's in better shape. He's obviously, you know, making this a big deal. And based on whether it was hype or not, people are buying into it with these two guys. And hopefully it lives up to billing.
That's the concern with boxing sometimes, is that you get sometimes the pre-fight hype is better than the fight itself. And I don't think that the hype has been so much so that this can't live up to it. It was a really good first fight, I thought. And I think that's why this is so anticipated. And with the outcome the first time, you know that no matter who wins, we're going to get this fight again. So now there's a reason to go out and win.
Discussed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be it's going to be a trilogy.
Regardless of who wins, there's going to be another one. And that's the good thing for boxing fans, unless this is a stinker, and then people might be like, we don't want to.
But when you think about, you know, the Pacquiao Mayweather, when it finally happened, they were both past their prime, and it didn't live up to billing. And this is, you know, when you go back to some of those big Tyson fights, when you go back to some of the matchups we used to live for, this has got a little bit of that hype. So hopefully it lives up to it.
I tell you what, there's nothing that I was a big boxing fan coming up, and the heyday for me was when Zab Judah and Floyd Mayweather Jr. were young boxers. But for me, nothing, and I mean nothing, is going to top Gotti Ward in that trilogy. That, to me, was some of the most fun and exciting. It made me a huge fan of Gotti. But it was just some of the best boxing and excitement. And I think the sport kind of needs something like that. I don't think that this would is going to fulfill
the names you just mentioned.
You've got the potential where you can draw in the casual fans to really be excited about boxing.
But that's the thing. When they really did that on a consistent basis, you weren't talking about names like the names you just mentioned. A lot of our listeners are going, I don't know who that is, and I don't know when that happened. But if you bring up, you know, Tyson, if you bring up
Everybody knows those guys.
De La Tyson, Hoya, Merriweather,
Holyfield. Yeah.
Before that, it was Sugar Ray and Thomas Hearns and Roberto Duran. And they were iconic names. It's been a while since we've had iconic names in the sport like that. And obviously, when Floyd called it a career.
Yeah, Pacquiao and Mayweather. Yeah. And here's the thing, and you'll hear a lot of people talk about this, so it's not like I'm breaking any ground here, but boxing relies on a solid heavyweight division to keep people interested. There used to be a time in this country where one of the biggest athletes, one of the most recognizable athletes in this country, was the heavyweight champion of the world. And you looked at him and thought, man, you know, it was either Ali or whoever it was, Holyfield. And that slowly, the heavyweight division started to deteriorate. And so did the interest in boxing. Now, MMA coming around gave us a new form of fighting, a little more brutal, a little less rules. You could use your feet, you could knee, you could do those things. And I think people got sick of, quite frankly, got sick of Don King and got sick of the whole boxing, because there were so many fights that felt orchestrated. There were so many fights that felt fixed. It's part of the reason why I moved away from boxing. And I feel like probably a lot of people similar to me did. Now, you've still got your hardcore Sweet Science fans that are always going to be fans of boxing, and that they're never going to go away.
Right.
But there's a need to bring people back to the sport, and guys like Wilder and Fury could do that for two totally different reasons. You watch Wilder hoping that he literally makes Fury's head fly off his shoulders, and Fury can show you what a boxer could do. Show you footwork and speed and techniques.
Stephen A. said it this morning, of all people, and I think he's right. From all the big names we used to know in all the different divisions, for a period of time now between Bob Arum and Don King, the promoters were more known than the fighters themselves.
Absolutely.
And now, hopefully, we're getting to a point where the fighters are making names for themselves and they become more household names. And they become, because the other thing that, that you look at this and say, who has more to gain and who needs this fight more? I mean, look, when you talk about Fury, he's already talking about he'll do the trilogy, but that's going to be it for him. Right. He's experienced and he's experimented and dabbled in WWE. So you know that he's looking to be an entertainer. He's looking to get into, you know, broadcasting. He can do so many different things. Whereas Wilder seems like a guy that's engaged in the sport and he needs this so that he can continue to kind of build that household name.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's an astute observation. There's one guy that wants it more and needs it more. And I think Fury wants to put on a show. And I don't want to get too far off track, but since we're on the topic, somebody tagged me on it. Did you see where Jason Whitlock came out and tried to make it racial between Wilder and Fury?
And he's been doing a lot of that stuff lately.
He was interviewing Tyson Fury, and he was like, well, you know, there was a lot going on in the previous fight about you guys and a lot of race. And Fury was like, what are you talking about? He was like, oh, you know, there was the build up, the great white hype. And he was like, this is about two men going in there. This has nothing to do with race. There's no race issues at all. I respect him as a person and he respects me as a person. I like him but we're fighters and we're going to fight each other. And I want to beat him and he wants to beat me. This has nothing to do with race or black and white. And he was like, oh, yeah, okay.
Well, the other
so he kind of like backed away, but it was like, bro, what are you doing?
Yeah, and the other thing is when you listen to how personal it got the other day during the press conference, it was about these guys have tried to like be there for the other guy along the way too. So Whitlock.
Yeah, he's a race baiting.
He's gotten a lot into really controversy is. And clickbait instead of doing just his job. So.
Yeah.
All right, we've got 2 hours in the books. We've got 1 hour still to go. 60 minutes on the clock. When we come back, don't go anywhere. It's the usual suspects. ESPN 97.5.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.